couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Lovebirds, The Trip to Greece, The Great, and Mythic Quest Quarantine. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Photograph and Emma. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I wanted to hit is, of course, the Zack Snyder cut of the Justice League is finally getting done. I find this an absurd story on its own, because if you remember the story behind the Justice League, is it was this rushed movie that they tried to cram in order to get their own Avengers, and it kind of was a flop, and they rushed it. They didn't let it grow organically, and they tried to cram everything into like Batman versus Superman, and then in a tragic turn of events, Zack Snyder's daughter commits suicide, and that just takes him out of the picture, as it should, because that is a horrible thing to happen. So he was not able to finish the movie, and they asked Joss Whedon to step in and finish it for him. Part of the thing is, you know, Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder are very, very different directors. It just was not a good mesh of creative juices, I guess you could say. It's sort of like if you take a movie by Peter Berg and then ask Wes Anderson to finish it. You would not get the kind of movie that you would expect, and it would be a bit jarring. And the Zack Snyder fanboys out there are going crazy because they're like, we want the Zack Snyder cut. We want was originally this. And they're banging their drums and going crazy. And so finally Warner Brothers said, okay, we'll put together the Zack Snyder cut. You know, it's been enough time. He's grieved. He's taking care of his own personal and family business. And he's going to come back and finish the movie the way he started, which I think is kind of cool. Whether or not you like Zack Snyder as a filmmaker, I think that's kind of cool of Warner Brothers to do. I'm curious to see it, but I don't think it's going to necessarily improve the Justice League as a movie. I think it's still going to be a little bit goofy and inconsistent. But HBO Max is going to air that sometime in 2021. So I guess this is proof that if you make enough noise on the internet and you're insulting enough to enough people, that you actually can't get stuff done. So I guess that's a good message. Who knows? The next piece of news is the trailer for Tenet, the Christopher Nolan movie that is supposed to save theaters. That's literally how people are framing this. They're saying, is Tenet going to save movies? Well, the new trailer dropped this week, Thursday night at 8 p.m. in Fortnite. And in the trailer, there was no release date. Usually a movie, especially 2 months before it comes out, it would include the release date, but the release date's not in the trailer. The release date's still on the website and the Twitter feed, and it's still technically coming out on July 17th. But this has gotten a lot of people wondering, is the Tenet movie going to actually come out, you know, or is it going to be postponed? I know some people want to see it on VOD. Do not hold your breath for that. I will eat my shorts if Christopher Nolan allows this movie to bypass theaters completely and go directly to VOD. Now, of course, he could always do a 70mm roadshow or whatever. But the part of the thing with this movie, a movie like this that has a lot of secrets to it, you get one chance to release it and that's it. So you kind of have to hold back and then release it everywhere in theaters. And I don't see theaters being ready. In fact, I read an article on Deadline the other week, and it was talking about what Warner Brothers is doing and planning for this. And they say that they're looking at some theaters that are reopening very closely, and they're constantly consulting with community health experts. Do you know who it doesn't say Warner Brothers is talking to? They're not talking to the president. They're not talking to politicians. They're not talking to business leaders or Wall Street investors. They're talking with health experts, because Warner Brothers does not want to have this go all in for release and then a week or two before have it discovered and reported in the news media that there are these big hot spots in movie theaters and then stop people from going to the film. Warner Brothers also does not want to release this if you don't have New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco in play. And that's like 25% of the North American box office. So without those three cities, that's 75% tops that you can do. And New York, LA, and San Francisco's are not ready to open up their theaters wide in July. Finally, if you read between the lines of what organizations are doing, again, not what politicians or business leaders or Wall Street investors are doing. If you look at what municipalities are doing, they're canceling summer events. They're canceling summer camp. They're canceling pools. All over the U.S., you're having places cancel stuff in July, you know, 4th of July parades and fireworks. My own hometown, Columbus, Ohio, they've canceled the Ohio State Fair, which takes place almost into August. And that's because they have serious public health concerns. And they're not listening to politicians to push them to open it. They're waiting to see, and they'd say, we'd rather not have the fair than to become this massive hotspot of infection. And maybe we're all wrong, but from what I'm seeing now, the people that are making real decisions on very specific things are not opening stuff up in July. And so I don't think you're going to get movie theaters to open up in July. And I think Warner Brothers realizes that, and they're going to move Tenet to at least the Christmas timeframe. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Shirley, which opens on VOD on June 5th.
To our suffering, my dear.
There's not enough scotch in the world for that.
Well, you were invited to stay here for a few days. Oh! Until we can find a place.
Shirley has these bouts.
She's gone sick in the head.
I read your story.
What are you doing in here?
It made me feel thrillingly horrible.
Do you know what it's like to have a secret?
This is a biopic of the legendary writer Shirley Jackson, who is most famous for writing The Haunting of Hill House, which, of course, spins off into a TV series on Netflix. It was a movie, The Haunting, a very good movie by Robert Wise. And this is looking into her life, the fact that she was maybe not quite all there, or she had some mental issues. I don't even know what to make of it. I think it's just a character study of her and the fact that she was a bit unbalanced. It's got Elizabeth Moss playing Shirley Jackson, and I think Elizabeth Moss is a great actress. I am getting a little tired of her, though. I think she's getting overexposed, because if you go back to when she was on Mad Men, she was sort of this dark horse, and people are like, I really like that actress. She's on Mad Men. Yeah, she doesn't have enormous cans like Christina Hendricks, and she's not super gorgeous like January Jones, but she's a really good actor, and she's compelling. And then she started to get her own work, and she started to star in her own films, and now she might be getting a little overexposed between The Handmaid's Tale, and she was in Invisible Man, and now she's got this Shirley Jackson movie. I just have this feeling that it's going to turn into, she's no longer the person you want to root for, and you're just like, you're just, it's another star just like the rest of them, and your ego's uncontrollable. I don't know, I'm reading way too much into it, but I'll still watch it. I'm curious about this movie. I'm a big fan of the book. The other one I want to hit really quickly is King of Staten Island, which is releasing on VOD on June 12th.
You can't focus on Scott anymore, honey. He's 24 years old.
Don't worry, Mom. You know, your daughter got smart and went to college and abandoned us. But I'm still here. I'm going to be here forever.
Yeah. People told me
slow my road. I want to become a real tattoo artist.
Your work is mad inconsistent.
I've been dating someone for a little while now.
The first guy you date in 17 years is a fireman just like that? You don't think that's weird?
What's wrong with being a fireman?
It's fine if you don't have kids, so that way you don't crush them when you don't come home that one time.
This is, of course, the one with Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live, and this is meant to be a bit of an autobiographical film. This was one that was going to be coming to theaters, but it's going to VOD, but I'm not surprised that this is going to VOD. This was never going to do super well in theaters. It was never going to be this big, huge release, so I think it's a relatively safe pivot for this film. I'm not a big fan of the presentation of Pete Davidson, but I did think Big Time Adolescence had a lot of merit. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Great and the trip to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. The first one is The Trip to Greece. Comedians Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon take another culinary trip in Europe, this time through the country of Greece.
This is the fourth time we've been on one of these little jaunts.
We're retracing the steps of Odysseus.
Greeks were camped here 10 years. I can do a week tops with a pillow. I won't camp without a pillow.
It's a shame we're getting the ferry. I would like to stay in the Hotel Lesbian.
Come, Mr. Bond. You like staying in the Hotel Lesbian just as much as I do.
We've not got much time left. You're going to miss me.
It can be exhausting.
Good God, you should meet you.
This is the fourth in the series. It started as, I believe, either short films or like TV segments with The Trip, which just had them going around Britain. And if you're not familiar with the character, Steve Coogan, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Philomena. He was in Stan and Ollie most recently. He's been in stuff like Night at the Museum and Hamlet 2. He's a great comedian. He's very, very funny. He's dry, but he's also outrageous. And Rob Brydon is another comedian. He's less known in the U.S., but he's very, very funny. If you've ever seen that clip of the guy talking about, if you've said this, then you've quoted Shakespeare. It's a list of all these idioms that Shakespeare had come up with. Rob Brydon's the one who's most famous for delivering that speech. I don't know if he originated it or not, but the two of them, they're exaggerated versions of themselves. They build up their own arrogance and obnoxiousness, and they have a lot of fun basically playing less than savory versions of what I guess they would consider themselves in real life. In this one, they're going to Greece. And of course, it's just beautiful. I mean, it makes you want to go. It makes you want to travel to where they're traveling and experience the spectacular grandeur of the locations. They go to the most famous areas. There's all these shots that you'll recognize and these locations in Greece. I remember seeing a movie from the 80s where they shot at this area in Athens, I believe. I think it was the Fury. That's just one that sticks in my mind as where this location was. There's this beach where they shot, I believe, part of Night and Day, that Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz movie. This was about 10 years ago. And this is a beautiful country, and it's not meant to be critical of the restaurants that they go to. Everywhere they go, it's great food and great wine and it's delicious. And it more spotlights these restaurants than it does review them and give you a overall, it's not verifying their Michelin stars or anything like that. But it's really just an excuse to get these two guys together. Whether they're driving across the countryside and sniping at each other while they're driving along, or when they're in the restaurants and they're one-upping each other with their Roger Moore impressions or their Dustin Hoffman impressions and fighting as a who does what better. This is the same kind of stuff they've done in the other three movies. And it's a lot of fun, especially if you know the characters. Now, what's nice about this, you can go in cold and not have watched this series at all. But if you're a fan of the series and you've seen all the other ones, this just makes it even more delicious. It's just fun to watch them be themselves and be obnoxious to each other and play off each other and get into just these weird little scrapes. I gotta say, I really enjoy the series. Unfortunately, I think this might be the last one. It seems to suggest that in the marketing, but who knows? You know, these guys are going to need to pay a mortgage payment at some point again, and they'll be like, hey, let's do the trip to, wherever. I think maybe the trip to Serbia is going to be canceled. But, you know, there's plenty of other wonderful places to go. So I'm going to have to say The Trip to Greece, I totally enjoyed. It's totally worth it. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film. Well, it's not really a film. It's a series. It's called The Great. And it's on the streaming service Hulu. It released last week, I think on the 15th. So I had a chance to finally catch up on it a little bit, and I wanted to address it because it's being heavily advertised, and it has a lot of quality to it. So, but let's play the trailer really quick. Hulu presents this loosely told tale of the rise of Catherine the Great in Russia.
It must be an enormous responsibility and honor to lead a country of such import.
It's actually not that hard.
I'm happy to hear anyone's problems with me.
Don't worry about the bodies.
I would like to be useful to Russia, to help its greatness.
You will bear my heirs. There is no higher use.
Together, we could create a greater Russia.
Well, I rule. You serve. We shall discuss whether or not to kill the Empress. She is a strange creature who I sense is at times laughing at me.
If the Emperor dies, Russia goes to the Empress.
Now, I am not a historian, and I've said this many times on the air. I mean, I can look stuff up. I can do the amount of research that anybody does. I can look up a Wikipedia entry. But I don't know Russian history at all. I don't. And that's okay. And because I get all my historic knowledge from movies, which is not a good thing, because there's a lot of conflicting information there. But The Great follows Catherine the Great when she gets married to Peter the Third, who's the son of Peter the Great. And you got to live up to that name, because as the show presents him, he's Peter the not as great as his father and probably not very good either. Now, Nicholas Holt plays Peter and Elle Fanning plays Catherine. And I got to say, Elle Fanning impressed me in this, because normally I'm used to her just sort of flopping in the movie. I've not seen her really act. And if you really want to see her not act, watch the Maleficent movies. She's awful in those films. I would be convinced that she doesn't know how to even speak on camera in those movies, because she is just so bland. But in this one, she's got some energy. She's got some wit. She's got some great delivery of lines. One of the things this show does is it doesn't hide the fact that it's playing a lot with some artistic license in terms of the history. It says mostly true story, and it's constantly reminding you that this is not a historical documentary. It's an adaptation of historical events. And that's okay. Cause I respect the fact that they're like, hey guys, don't take a class and use this as a way to study for the exam, cause you're going to get a lot of things wrong. It plays around with convention. It plays around with anachronisms to make things work and give it a much more realistic, down to earth American look at things, rather than just this stuffy, very Russian heavy drama that it could be. So it has a lightheartedness to it, even though it deals with a lot of awful things that happen in any sort of royalty, you know, killings and beheadings and rape and murder and general unpleasantness that happens when you're leading an army and a country in the 1700s. Part of the thing that's most noticeable is how lavish the sets are and the locations. And it's a gorgeously shot show. I appreciate that. And I like the sort of modern feel that it has. It makes it feel like you're watching an authentic television show instead of some stuffy BBC piece or something like that. And the acting's good. It's not exactly something that grabs me, though. I've never been one who's loved the political interaction in royalty. I think the infighting, it's like watching an 18th century version of the Kardashians. It's just something you kind of want to roll your eyes at. I mean, like, Nicholas Holt does a great job playing the leader of Russia, and he's this narcissistic clown who thinks he's a genius at everything he does, but he's completely ill-suited for the job and makes things worse. And then, of course, it puts Catherine in a much better position. So it's worth checking out, especially if you like these period pieces. So I'm going to have to say the Great kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Lovebirds and Mythic Quest Quarantine. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the Lovebirds. Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae stars a couple on the verge of a breakup when they're caught in a night of crime trying to clear their names.
We have to go to the police because we have nothing to hide.
Why did you run from the scene of the crime?
Good question, officer.
That's me covering up my body cam.
We just need to find the guy the police are looking for.
You suggesting we actually go out there and solve a murder?
All we need is a name, and then we're in the clear.
Who do you work for?
Little beanbag?
Yeah. You think about your grandma and that furry beanbag?
3 a.m. These people are super dangerous, and they're really powerful.
This was originally slated to come out sometime in April. I forget. I think actually early April, pretty early in the April frame. So it was like almost ready to come out when the lockdowns happened in the middle of March. And of course, the theaters all shut down, and they had to move it. And it's one of those that moved into a streaming service. Now, these are getting less press because it was both Scoob and Trolls World Tour that stayed on the docket and ended up getting a VOD release. But these movies that are getting turned to a streaming service, you're going to start seeing those crop up again. I think My Spy was another one with Dave Bautista and that little girl. That was going to be, I think that's going on Amazon Prime at some point. Just recently, there was news that the Tom Hanks submarine movie Greyhound, it has been picked up by Apple TV Plus. And that's an interesting thing, because actually Apple TV Plus is trying to diversify its content. One of the things that Hulu and Netflix and Amazon have over Apple TV Plus is they have a backlog of TV shows and movies, whereas Apple TV Plus is just their original programming. Well, now Apple TV Plus is starting to gobble up and license some older movies and TV content so that they can release that. And you can binge watch stuff other than just the new content, because you're only going to have so much new content. And so you're going to start seeing more of these things showing up on demand. Like you had like Valley Girl. We talked about Valley Girl. You got King of Staten Island coming up. But The Lovebirds is one that got moved to Netflix and is getting just a regular Netflix release. Of course, the box office is going to be non-existent for this one because they don't measure box office the same way for Netflix. But anyways, in The Lovebirds, it's essentially the same story as that movie Date Night that came out about 10 years ago with Steve Carell and Tina Fey, where they're just this boring old couple that gets caught up in this whirlwind of crime and they're trying to keep safe or whatever. In this one, of course, you've got the two characters played by Camille Nanjiani and Issa Rae. So obviously very different than Steve Carell and Tina Fey. But it's the same story where they're sort of bumbling through, has a lot of jokes to it. It's meant to be a screwball comedy, but it also has a little more violent content, which actually the more violent it gets, the funnier the movie is. Both Nanjiani and Ray have backgrounds in comedy, so it works for them. The problem is, while they have decent chemistry together, them playing off each other reminds me of sort of like the antithesis of when they had Tiffany Haddish and Kevin Hart star in Night School sometime a year or two ago, where that one, they kind of are both the same type of comedians. They're both very loud and obnoxious and they don't play off each other very well. Whereas the opposite's the way it is with Nanjiani and Ray, they're both kind of reactionary comedians. So they both are trying to react to each other. And this was the problem I had with the movie Stuber, which starred Nanjiani last year with Dave Bautista, is both of them are kind of good supporting actors. They can help round out a team really nicely, but neither of them are leads. And I think Issa Rae has more of the leading lady aspect than Nanjiani has as the leading man. I am not convinced that he can carry a movie that isn't something like The Big Sick, which has kind of made him somewhat of a household name, at least for people who enjoy movies. But I mean, there's funny moments to it. They both handle the comedy pretty well, and it's absurd. At times, they get a little bit too stupid. There's like this scene where they're in this sort of eyes wide shut kind of sex society, and they're not subtle at all. And you're like, come on, you're in danger. You wouldn't be watching this like you would a movie where you're constantly talking throughout. So, I mean, it has its ups and downs and it's not perfect, but I thought it was funny. It had enough stuff that made me laugh, and it's a lark. It's like 87 minutes long, so it's a short movie. You can get through it pretty quickly. I enjoyed watching it with my wife. It didn't overstay its welcome. I'm going to say I enjoy The Lovebirds. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next piece I want to talk about is, it's not even a TV series, it's an episode of TV, Mythic Quest Quarantine. During the pandemic, the team behind Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet tries to stay sane and update the game from home.
Please be wearing a shirt.
Oh, hey, Dave.
What are you doing in a hot tub? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm in a hot tub.
Obviously, the quarantine has been tough on everyone.
I don't know what I pressed, but I'm here.
You look awful.
You lose!
You're a cashed-up bogan.
Poppy is being mean in Australian. Is the meeting almost over?
The meeting hasn't even started.
Just as the Parks and Rec people got together and shot their own quarantine episode, and just as the group from Monk put together kind of a reunion video that was hosted by Tony Shalhoub, you can find that on YouTube, and it's meant to promote Peacock, the new streaming service from NBC Universal. Just as they did these quarantine episodes of them talking on a Zoom call, Mythic Quest Quarantine is that setup. It takes all the characters and they shot it at their own homes with their own iPhones, and they put it together and edited it together into this episode of Mythic Quest. First of all, if you've not watched Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet, it's a workplace comedy on Apple TV Plus, and it's very funny. Rob McEnhenry, who did It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, he's the creator of it, and he's in charge of the show. He plays a video game designer who's a bit of an egomaniac, and he's got his team underneath him who are in a terrible work environment, but they're struggling, and they have one of the most popular games out there. And it's a fun series. I think it's like 10 episodes. It came out in February, and so they put together this quarantine episode, which is actually quite funny. Now, the catch is you got to know the character. So you could watch this and think it was funny, but if you've watched the series and you know all the characters and kind of how they fit together, it is quite funny because there's quite a few characters in the show and they cram them all into this episode and everybody gets a little bit of time. Obviously, most of the time is spent on McElhenry's character and his main programmer, Poppy, who's adorable and fun, but she's also kind of a hot mess herself. And you gotta remember, this is the guy who helped create It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's not a warm and fuzzy show. And you feel like they're not living in a very healthy environment. But similar to what Parks and Rec did, is they made this a little bit more warm and fuzzy, where everybody is coming together, and it's trying to give a little bit of a positive spin on the depression and the weight that we've had during this pandemic. Because, you know, I know things are opening up in various stages around the country, but we still have a virus out there, and we still have people staying at home when they can, and you still have people working from home, and our lives are still disrupted because even if certain things are opening, we are not back to normal and we're not going to be for a long time. And there are still things you can't do or you shouldn't be doing. This is going to be weighing heavy on the American psyche for at least another several months. And it's going to be a thing that people think back to 10 years from now. People are going to be looking back and going, remember how tough it was to get through some of this stuff. And this is the one thing that entertainment does. For everybody out there who doesn't think that the arts is a good thing, this is the stuff that's getting people through it. The ability to watch something that can be uplifting, the ability to distract yourself with old TV shows and movies. And that's one of the reasons why art and movies and television and entertainment is important, because it gets our mind off of some of the worst things that we could be obsessing over at any one time. So I respect Mythic Quest Quarantine for giving an uplifting message. So I'm going to have to say that Mythic Quest Quarantine rocks as well.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Photograph and Emma. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are finishing up the final segment. And before I talk about the Home Cinema Roundup, I do want to give a little bit of a nod to the box office. Once again, The Wretched, which is that little horror film from IFC I talked about a couple weeks ago. Once again, that is continuing to be the top grossing movie of the week. And it's actually ratcheting up. This last week, it actually made almost $92,000, which you got, I understand. $92,000 is not very big. But if a Star Wars movie is making $92,000, that's not doing a whole heck of a lot. But considering this, The Wretched is its gross is still well less than half a million, but it's getting a real bump just being in drive-in theaters. And I love the fact that drive-in theaters are getting their due, and everybody can remember that how much fun they had when they were a kid. I remember going when I was a little kid in the 70s to a couple drive-in theaters. My parents didn't take me to too many because they were annoyed with sitting in the car. But we went to a couple. And then, of course, when I got into college, my at the time girlfriend, my wife, now, but my girlfriend at the time, that was the one time we could get away from everybody else at her house. We go to the drive-in theater and, you know, do what people do in drive-in theaters. I won't go into any more detail than that, but these were fun times for me as a kid. And, you know, I understand drive-in theaters aren't going to come back. You're not going to have drive-in theaters the way you did in the heyday of the 70s or even the 50s or 60s. Those times have passed. They're a little bit of a kitschy throwback now, but it's nice to see them getting some buzz and getting some traction and the drive-in theaters getting a little bit of love now. And that's great to have come back. So, it's giving The Wretched, this little horror movie that came out of nowhere, even though it's not making millions of dollars, it's topping the box office. It's this weird moment where it's ruled May. Did you ever think that a tiny little horror movie from IFC was going to be the highest grossing movie in May? No, you never did. This is a neat little footnote in history. And eventually theaters are going to come back. But I think there's a lot of stuff that people have to figure out, you know, between smaller theaters and multiplexes and depending on the size and number of screens and when studios start releasing movies. There's a lot to work through. So we still have some time. And that's okay. I don't expect Tenet to actually show in July, nor do I expect Mulan. I think they got to take another month or so to figure out entrance and exits to the theaters and how many people can be in there. And then they have to start rolling out the product, and you can't fill the screens too much because you're going to have to spread people around in different auditoriums. But movie theaters will be back. Don't worry. By this time next year, I think things will be back to moderately normal in movie theaters, but it's going to be a rough 2020. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I actually have two selections to talk about. The first one came out last week, I believed. I didn't get to cover it. It is The Photograph. It came out earlier this year in theaters. It was one of them that actually got to theaters this year in February. I think it came out on Valentine's Day. A woman and her mother's separate love stories are told in this drama that transcends generations.
My daughter, I put my love into photographs, pictures, took space in my heart instead of people.
This was supposed to be a date.
It is a date.
I love you.
I love you too.
I just don't understand why she couldn't tell me about her life while she was alive.
Maybe she thought it would help you look at her in another way.
Hey, I'm Michael Block from The Republic. I'm doing a story about your mom.
How's your article coming?
To be honest, I was a little distracted.
The Photograph is it's a beautifully shot movie. And I say that knowing that the majority of actors in this, almost every single speaking role, is a Black person. And that makes sense. If you know anything about shooting a movie, if you know anything about lighting a movie, historically, Black people have not been lit well. Because most cinematographers over the years, until recently, only lit for the white people. And this isn't just a lighting thing. It's wardrobe and hair and everything. I remember going to this event last fall where they talked about Black cinema, and it was like Eddie Murphy was there and Don Cheadle and Nia Long was there. And both Nia Long and Eddie Murphy were talking about how difficult it was in the 80s and 90s for a Black person to actually get proper makeup or hairstyling on a Hollywood, even a big Hollywood movie. I mean, we're talking like Eddie Murphy and Nia Long, who actually had quite a career in the 90s, but she still had to bring her own, not just her own makeup. She had to bring her own tools. She had to bring her own brushes because they didn't have appropriate brushes. Even for a movie, like when they have a movie that stars multiple Black people, they still didn't have that stuff in the wardrobe and makeup department. and the skin tones are going to be different with the lights you use and the backgrounds. And I have to say, the photograph, Vern, I'm going to tell you, I was bored as heck with this movie. This is not my cup of tea. It's this love story drama that I found incredibly dull. But it's beautifully shot to the level of something like If Beale Street Could Talk, where it's very rich and they photograph the actors extremely appropriately for the screen. And that's a good thing. We need more of that. We need more cinematographers who understand how to light everybody, not just people with white skin. And the photograph, if there's any sort of real triumph of that movie, it's the look of the film, and not just the lighting, but the set design and the colors that they use in the background and the saturation of colors. It's a beautiful looking movie. Now, of course, I mean, the story's fine. I mean, it's a love story, and it's funny. Issa Rae's in it, cause she was, of course, in The Lovebirds, a very different type of movie, but Lakeith Stanfield is the other main subject matter in here. And it's about their relationship. I found their relationship incredibly boring, but I don't like romantic dramas. So I'll fully admit this was not my cup of tea. And if you like this sort of thing, it's probably going to be much better. But I mean, it's a beautifully shot movie. And it goes to show you, when they made a movie like Black Panther and they made a point to not just cast it with black people, but put black people in charge of several of the departments, including like the hair and makeup, that makes sense, because you have to understand, not everybody is going to be photographed the way you would Reese Witherspoon. So I'm going to have to say, even though I think it's an important film in terms of how the filmmaking is done, I was bored to tears with it. So I'm going to say it kind of sucks, but it's still got a lot of value to it.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
The other one I want to hit really quickly is Emma. This is out this week on DVD and Blu-ray. And in this one, a bored socialite likes to meddle in love, but discovers that her own love life has much to be desired.
We gather here in this time of man's great innocence.
Oh, Mr. Elton!
Emma.
I can scarcely be loved, and a father's gentleman, and a gentleman of fortune.
Miss Woodhouse. Such news.
This is a Jane Austen movie. I pretty much feel like I just have to say this is a Jane Austen movie, and then people will understand what I'm talking about. This is not my cup of tea, just like the photograph is not my cup of tea. This is a little more whimsical and lighthearted. This is like, you know, Pride and Prejudice is a little bit of a heavier story. This is a little more whimsical and silly and fun. But it's still Jane Austen. It's still the idle rich sitting around trying to find out who's going to date whom. And that I have such non-interest in this movie. I mean, it's beautiful. Just like I talked about The Great, the set design and the backgrounds are gorgeous, because they shoot this in, you know, palatial estates, and they have wonderful costuming. And I'm sure it's going to be nominated for Oscars for this. But it just, I just found this movie so boring, so dull, even though and there are things where I'm watching it going, well, this in itself contained in this one moment of the movie, yes, that's funny. I laughed at that. Oh, I chuckled at that. But otherwise, it is so colossally boring. And I've never seen the Emma with Gwyneth Paltrow, but watching this movie, as authentic as it certainly seemed to be, it didn't seem to be something that would make me want to watch anything beyond it. Now, of course, the bonus features, they got some deleted scenes and a gag reel, and a couple small things in the background, plus a feature commentary. But just a couple little bonus material. You're mainly getting this Blu-ray or DVD for the movie itself. And for me, I'm going to have to say that sucks.
It sucks.
Also out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, we have Sonic the Hedgehog and The Way Back and Brahms the Boy 2. All of these are things that were out in theaters before the pandemic hit. There's also vintage releases of The Evil of Frankenstein and Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell, if you like those Hammer films from the 60s. And then for TV, you've got Castle Rock Season 2 and The Good Place, the complete collection. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The High Note and The Vast of Night. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or still at home.